Shalom, shalom, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Pulse of Israel here in our eternal and ancestral homeland, the land of Israel, in our eternal and indivisible capital, Jerusalem, since King David's time. Remember that, everyone. That is so important to remember. Today, back with one of my favorite guests, Dr. Mordechai Kedar, professor and expert Middle East, Islam. Shalom, Dr. Kedar.
Shalom, Avi. It's a pleasure to be here. Just to continue what you said about indivisible Jerusalem.
Yes.
Jerusalem was never divided,
right?
Never, not under the Romans, not under the Greeks, not under the Jews, not under the Islamic occupation, but under Christian. It was always united. It was a city,
right?
Just a regular city. Right. Only when the Jordanians,
right,
in 1948 occupied illegally,
yeah,
the eastern side of Jerusalem, eastern part of Jerusalem. Only then, only 19 years, it was divided.
Right.
Now it's united again. Baruch Hashem.
Baruch Hashem.
Thank God.
Right, and it's so important that people be reminded of that, because unfortunately, in the daily news, it is always reported as if there are two different sides of Jerusalem.
West Jerusalem.
Right, that it doesn't belong to us. So, for my viewers, you guys know the truth. So now, always a pleasure having you to get to the truth about what's going on in the Middle East, because you have your... Yeah, I'm the pulse of Israel. You have the pulse of the Arab street, the Arab language, what's going on with the Arabs amongst us, the Middle East, etc. So before we go into some of the lies that you're exposing, I wanted to start with a bigger question. How is the Arab world one, and specifically the Arab Muslims in our midst in Judea and Samaria, Gaza, dealing with our new, first ever historic, proud Jewish nationalist Israeli government? Because if you talk to plenty of Jewish leaders, especially on the more left side of the political map, whether in Israel or in America, they will say, oh my God, this is horrible for peace. We can't have such a government. What is your perspective on understanding of the Arab street in the Middle East with Israel's new government?
Well, in the Middle East, generally speaking, once you are a Zionist, even far left, Zionist, it doesn't really matter, because you are illegal invader who occupied this country. Even if you are all the way to the left, or if you are, of course, if you are from the right. So as long as you are Zionist, you are illegitimate, illegal, and your place is wherever your parents or grandparents came from. This is the general, I would say, the way how the street looks at us, and I see it through the social media, because the social media now is the mouthpiece of the men in the street, not the governments. The governments play the game of political correctness sometimes, especially those who have peace with Israel, so they cannot say that Israel has no right to exist. How come you, Egyptian, Egypt or Jordan or other countries, made peace with Israel if Israel doesn't have any legitimacy to exist? But the street really expresses how the street feels. And this is totally illegitimate. You know what? Once in a while, you can see somebody who says, hey, Israel, the Jews came back to their ancestral land, or all these things. But it is a small minority, usually intellectuals, those who prefer daily life on history, on religion, of course. After all, according to Islam, Jews have to live under the yoke of Islam.
Right.
As Vimis, people who live under the auspice of Islam, Jews have no right to a state. Jews have no right to any state,
right,
any size. Doesn't matter. You know, for them, the occupation of 1967 is not the problem. The problem is the occupation of 1948. Okay? So, in general, what we see today is once you are Zionist, it doesn't really matter if you are leftist or right-wing English. And this is why they want to see what this government will do. And here, some kind of cynicism here in the Middle East. People, you know, when you say things, okay, kalam fadi, yani, it means saying hollow words.
Hollow words, okay.
Hollow words. Or tharthara. Tharthara is mumbling. Okay? As long as you say things, people do not take you seriously. Once you start doing things,
mm-hmm,
this is the only time when people start actually looking at you and what you do.
But you do count, not your words, basically.
Definitely, because in the Middle East, look, they live in dictatorial regimes. In Syria, in Jordan, in Egypt, in all these are more or less dictatorial regimes. There are no real democracy in any of the Arab and modern states, and even the conservative states. And in dictatorship, the rulers are speaking, publishing whatever they want. The people know exactly how credible those words are, because all they want, these rulers, is to create legitimacy to rulers who have no legitimacy at all. Assad has legitimacy. The king in Jordan, who is a family of like 70 or 80 people, have legitimacy, especially within the Palestinians. Sisi has a legitimacy. Unfortunately, he doesn't have much, but he is ruling the country, not to mention other rulerships in the Middle East. So they know that everything which the rulers say is meant to create legitimacy to a leader who almost doesn't have any legitimacy. Okay, so this is why they take what they hear in a very limited
grain of salt, as we say.
Big
grain of salt.
Grain of salt.
Okay.
So this is in general, and when they hear our leaders and politicians, the same thing. They speak. Okay, now we want to see what they do, because what they do is really what happens on the ground and not what they say. Okay, so this is how the Middle East looks at us. And of course, people are warning, people are afraid, maybe a little bit. But as you can see, Ben-Gvir and the government still have not yet succeeded to strike terror into the hearts of our enemies, because they speak much and do not do as much as they speak. Right. So,
it's not the words are not yet being translated into
the definition.
Okay. So next question. What's the latest lie you're gonna show us from the Arab Muslim street?
Well, look at Twitter.
Okay.
I retweeted something which was with a tweet by a historian, Arab historian named Tamer Zahari, who shows the two faces of one coin. He writes, this is a shekel, and this is a Palestinian Canaanite shekel from 3,000 years ago.
Right.
Well, he has some mistakes, but this is a Canaanite, and he describes this this coin. On the left, you can see the eagle, the symbol of power. In the right, you see a flower. I think this is a lily, a symbol of beauty, and together they are the Canaanite Palestinian shekel. Little did the man knows that on the right side, on the face of the eagle, you can see to the right from the eagle, you can see three letters written in ancient Hebraic script, which says Yud Hey Dalet, which is Yehuda. This is the Jewish
Judah
coin,
Judea
coin, which was minted by the Kingdom of Judea in the first temple.
Right.
And the man disseminates this picture,
showing it proof that it's theirs and the way that
Palestinian Canaanite.
Right.
Okay? And people believe.
Right.
Now, after all, this is what the historian, as he presents himself. Look, and this actually is added to, if you Google the numbers 80, 18, and 2, you'll find the newest lie. You know, 18, 18 and 2,
okay.
Together are 100.
Okay.
Now, what they claim today is that 80% of the antiquities which were found in Eretz Israel, in the land of Israel, are Islamic, 18% are Christian, and 2% are Canaanite.
Who's making this claim?
This is in the media? Or no?
The Arab media. Arab Muslim media, okay. Okay.
Means there is no real Jewish remnants
right.
in this ground. And thousands of coins like this one, mosaics with inscriptions in Hebrew or Greek, which was also lingua franca in this area in the first century CE, which talk about the mosaics of synagogues, Beit Alpha and many other places, or columns of Batei Midrash, or
Jewish learning centers,
or synagogues, right. Which with Hebrew inscription, right. With Hebrew letters.
Right, all over the land.
Okay, all over the land, wherever you go, you're right, left, and center. Even the Rockefeller Museum in East Jerusalem,
right, the eastern side of Jerusalem,
which
right.
Was under the Judean occupation, shows a big, giant display of Jewish remnants, which were found in excavations here in the land of Israel. And now they claim that the Jews who were here were like Bedouins, came and went. They didn't leave anything in this land. And whatever antiquities you see today in museums, which shows Jewish all kinds of characteristics, they are all forged by the Zionists. Everything is forged. Avi, they were already in the 19th century, before the Zionist movement started its activity. Archaeologists who came from Europe, from Britain, from other places, dug in this country and found thousands of Jewish remnants. And it was in it, and they're neither Jewish nor Zionist.
Right.
Okay? Okay, then Kenyon and many others. So, and they documented everything which they found, described it and wrote about this in academic publications, like Biblical Antiquities, all these publications which you see until today. So, to say that they also forged Jewish remnants in the 19th century, British archaeologists, okay. Now, but the biggest, the nicest forgery, I heard once in the Jordanian TV. They brought a lecture of a professor of history in Amman University, standing in front of a class, and saying that the Bible was written by the Zionists after 1948. In order to justify the Zionist campaign over Palestine.
The Bible!
The Bible was authored by the Zionists
after 1948.
After 1948. And the class and the class are sitting in front of him, you know, and they listen and they write. And it looked like class of like MA or PhD because
where was this class?
In Jordan.
In Jordan.
In Jordan. Now, this, yes, I know this nonsense, is so, this nonsense is so easy,
right?
It's so easy to refute. Right. Look, there are translations of the Bible to Greek.
Right.
The Septuaginta, the 70 right. Translation, which was written in the 3rd century BCE.
Right.
Okay? It was this also, the translation, was written by the Zionists right. After 1948. There is the translation to the Vulgata. To Latin, for the first century CE. There are translations to English, St. John, all these things, from Middle Ages, also were written
all by, after 1948.
After 1948. Look, music,
lies, screen time
music compositions, Handel, the Messiah, start with, comfort ye my people. Nachamu, nachamu, ami, Isaiah chapter 40. So Handel also lived after 1948
yeah.
To write this thing. Or maybe the Zionists wrote the Messiah of Handel, which was authored in the 17th century.
That's okay,
and this is the level.
Right, that's what we're dealing with.
This is the level of lies which we have now to fight.
Right.
Now, what people say, well, this is their narrative.
This is their narrative. Right.
This is the postmodernist way. Now, let me tell you something, Avi. I do not accept this concept of narrative.
Good.
Why? Because the concept of narrative was invented in order to elevate the lie from the level of lie to level of narrative and to downgrade
true.
The truth from the level of truth to the level of
narrative.
So now you have... You don't have any more truth and falsification. What you have are two parallel.
Everyone has their own truth.
Equal narrative.
Right.
Everyone is entitled to have his own truth.
Right.
Okay? This is garbage.
Yeah.
This is nonsense.
Yeah.
To say that the lie is true and the truth is a lie, this is something which, what? Is this what we have postmodernism for? To give a seal of approval for every lie? If I say that your house belongs to me, says it's a legitimate story?
Right.
It's my narrative?
Right.
Okay, so this is, yeah, everybody will tell you, yeah. Okay. No, I do believe in the right of everyone to have his own narrative, but not my home is my home.
Right.
I'm not willing to share it with anyone because I bought it and I paid for it, and right. Okay, it's a good narrative.
As long when it comes to you.
All right. Now, imagine now, and there is a new shtick. This is a well-known shtick. Muslims who come today to Spain, for example, they claim that they actually came back to their country because Spain was once under the Islamic occupation between 711 CE, when the Muslims occupied Spain, until the end of the 15th century, when the Reconquista actually reconquered Spain. So now their narrative is that I'm coming back to their homeland in Spain. Would the Spaniards allow such a narrative?
Right.
Are they entitled to such a narrative? Okay,
right.
Here you are. Not only this, don't forget the Islamic troops were defeated in 1683, September 11, in the gates of Vienna, the capital of Austria today.
Right.
Means all the space to the south, means from Greece, from the Balkans, all the way north to Vienna, were under Spanish Islamic occupation in the 17th century. So if they come today to Austria or other countries in this space of the Balkans and north, they actually come back to their homeland, which belongs to them, because according to the Islamic view, a land has only one way ticket to enter Islam. And once the infidels, the Christians, are occupying back this land, it's illegitimate. And this is their narrative.
Right.
So what? Today the Austrians should give their country to the Muslims only because they entitled to have their narrative. Okay, this is what I'm saying. The word or the concept of narrative is something which people agree to.
It's dangerous.
As long as it's on the other's expense.
Right.
Like our expense.
Right.
But when it comes to their expense, I want to see the Austrians give the Muslims their land all the way to the north, to Vienna.
Right.
Okay, so this is what it's hypocrisy, and it's in postmodernism actually destroys the human thinking,
mm-hmm.
in my view. Because if everybody has its own decision to decide about what is truth, what is falsification, what he is, what she is. Okay, and we see it in gender issues today, but this is beyond our scope.
So what's interesting, and I think very important what you're bringing up, and with this what will end, is on the one hand we're talking about, you brought up the two examples of how this narrative in the case of Islam, all right? Because on the one hand, the Arab Muslims claim there is no Jewish people who have a claim to our ancestral homeland, and it's this whole creation of a fake historical people called Palestinians, and that this is their homeland and basically taking our Jewish history. But yet we also see this in connection to the whole Islamic story, whether it's that there is no Jews, Moses was a Muslim, Abraham was a Muslim, Jesus was a Muslim.
We all,
right?
Everyone is. All people in the world,
right,
are born Muslims.
Right, according to Islam, right.
And their parents corrupt them by turning them into Jewish or Christian or other infidels. everyone was born Muslim.
Right.
If you don't know Avi.
Right, right.
Okay?
Right. So, that and every place where Islam, as you mentioned, in terms of Spain and up to Vienna, Austria, that once was at one point in time under Muslim control, well, that forever then must be under Muslim control. You're seeing how I think it's important that people see that our battle here over our homeland that they're waging against us in the name of this fake cause called Palestine, which I say is the biggest Jew-hating anti-Semitic movement in all of history, is basically all part of the Islamic controlling agenda, not just against Jews, but against all of us, all of humanity.
Not only this, you know, they built the whole issue about the land of Israel as on Al-Aqsa.
Right.
In Jerusalem,
right.
In Al-Aqsa Mosque,
right.
Which is mentioned in the Quran.
Right.
But the problem is, this is also a falsification of history and the places and geography as well. Because in the days of Muhammad, Al-Aqsa Mosque was, according to Islamic sources, was near a village named Jorana, 29 kilometers to the northeast from Mecca. Means the Al-Aqsa Mosque was deep in the Arab Peninsula in the days of Muhammad. 50 years after he died in 632 CE.
And never was in Israel.
Never was he. 50 years later, 682, there was a rebellion in Mecca. And the people, the Umayyads who lived in this area, in the what today, land of Israel, Lebanon, western Syria, western Jordan, the people in Mecca who rebelled against the Umayyads, who were the caliphs already, did not allow the Umayyads to come for Hajj in Mecca. And you know, Hajj is a very important obligation in Islam. It's one of the five pillars of Islam. So in order to perform the obligation of Hajj, they chose Jerusalem as an alternative place for pilgrimage, for Hajj. And in order to justify it, they claimed that the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is mentioned in the Quran, is actually in Jerusalem and not in Jordan. And they concocted thousands of stories of quotations from Muhammad, as if he said all kinds of things about Jerusalem. Jerusalem is not mentioned in the Quran at all.
Right.
So they created all this, a part of the hadith of the oral tradition, with all these concoctions about Jerusalem, in order to elevate Jerusalem, the narrative, to the level of third place in holiness to Islam. Who didn't accept it? The Shia. Because the third place in holiness in Islam after Mecca and Medina, according to the Shia, is the city of Najaf in Iraq. Not here at all. Mm-hmm. And for them, Jerusalem has no meaning. Or not special meaning. Just like Damascus, just Beirut, Alexandria, or Cairo, or any other city. Jerusalem, according to the Shia, is not holy, or not holier than any other place, apart, of course, from Mecca and Medina. Okay, so this dispute inside Islam actually shows you that not all the Muslims accepted the idea of the narrative of the holiness of Jerusalem. And this is another fake news of the 7th century, which, people today believe in, as if Muhammad came with a horse with wings. You know, every horse in this area has wings, of course. So this is actually already the fake news of the 7th century, which constituted the idea that Jerusalem is holy to Islam. So this is the... By the way, in order to make the Dome of the Rock, they actually forced the Christians of Baalbek in Lebanon to dismantle a church, to destroy a church, and to take its... a roof with a dome, with a golden dome, to take it to Jerusalem and to build it on the Temple Mount in order to show that not only the Christians have nice churches in Jerusalem, also the Muslims have nice monuments in Jerusalem. And they actually performed the Tawaf, the Hakafot.
Okay. Going in circles circling.
Which they do in Mecca, they did it around the center of the Temple Mount, around the Dome of the Rock.
This is back in which year? This is back in
the end of 7th century. Look, they were prevented from coming to Mecca for like 10 years, between 682 and 691, when the rebellion was crushed. So, but meanwhile, they sanctified Jerusalem. And they, so Jerusalem became the holy place, third place in holiness, according to the Islamic narrative. While the Shia did not approve of it, and even within the Sunnah, there were scholars who didn't agree to this because they knew the background of the wars between the people of Mecca, the Hashemites, and the people of this area, the Umayyads, and they knew that the whole thing of Jerusalem is fake news, and they didn't accept, like Ibn Taymiyyah, who lived in Damascus in the ages, and even before him, Razali, one of the pillars of the Sufi sect in Islam. So this is why, and people are not aware of it, that the holiness of Jerusalem, according to Islam, is an invention of the Umayyads in order to undermine the centrality of Mecca when they were not allowed to come to Mecca for pilgrimage. So fake news are driving the Middle East.
Driving the Middle East and driving the whole agenda against the Jewish people, you know, our return to our ancestral
Liza Minnelli, Liza yeah. Minnelli and Joel Gray taught us that money makes the world go around,
right?
In Kabaret.
Yeah.
I would say here in the Middle East, the lie makes the Middle East
go around.
Go around.
Everyone, Dr. Mordechai Kedar, when you want to hear the truth, exposing the lies that are usually said in Arabic and then translated into English and spread all over the world, especially in social media, follow Dr. Mordechai Kedar. Dr. Kedar, thank you so much. It is always a pleasure having you and speaking to you. Everyone, signing off for another episode of The Pulse of Israel here in our eternal and ancestral homeland, land of Israel, in our eternal and indivisible capital, Jerusalem, since King David's time. Shalom, and thanks for watching.
Pulse of Israel, frontline videos from the Holy Land. Support our work by donating today.